It's such a friendly place.
And today's Focus programme is introduced by Jules Alderson.
Hello and welcome to Focus on Hospital Radio Norwich. I'm your host Jules, and today we're meeting a member of the team at the Norfolk and Suffolk Aviation Museum. This is a fantastic local museum, and we are sure you'll enjoy hearing all about the huge range of artefacts and the wonderful team of volunteers who keep everything going. Thank you so much for joining me today. Can I start by asking you to introduce yourself, please?
Okay, my name is Steve Bell. I am the chairman of the trustees of the Norfolk and Suffolk Aviation Museum, which is what we're here to talk about today. I have no background in aviation, although I am a private pilot, fly for fun, and worked for 32 years for the Norwich Union.
As you said, we're here today to talk about the Norfolk and Suffolk Aviation Museum. Could you introduce the museum for our listeners?
The museum is larger than everybody thinks. We have over 60 aircraft, or very large parts of aircraft, plus about 45,000 things, which most of which are on display at any one time. And those things can be anything from a very small nut from the wing of an aeroplane that crashed in 1944 to an entire aeroplane that's in the collection. We're spread over two hangars, two buildings that join those hangars together, and four buildings outside, which comprise the Bomber Command Museum, so a history of Bomber Command within the East Anglian region, a history of the RAF's Coastal Command and Air Sea Rescue, and a history of the 446 Bomb Group, who were based at the nearby Flixton Airfield, just up the hill from here, plus a building dedicated to No. 6 Group, Royal Observer Corps, who were the group that were based in this area during the war and the Cold War.
That sounds like a huge amount of artefacts you've got there, and with so much variety. Could you tell us how the museum started and how it's grown from its beginnings?
Yes, the museum started with a group of friends who would go out at weekends and dig up pieces of aeroplane that had crashed, mostly during the war, but also quite a few from after the war. It's not a well-known fact, but in the late 1940s and early 1950s, the RAF were losing between 10 and 20 aircraft a week in crashes. We had a lot more then. If we lost that many now, we wouldn't have many left after a very short period. So they were collecting these bits and pieces. Back in those days, you didn't need a license to do. Nowadays, if you want to dig up pieces of aeroplane, you need to get a license from the Ministry of Defence. But they would collect those pieces and take them home. And then after a while, their wives got fed up with lots of pieces being in the house or in the shed or in the garden or whatever. They were encouraged to do something with them. The local post office in Flixton offered them a Nissen hut in their back garden. They used that to store the artifacts along with pieces of the garden. The post office also said, if you want to open it to the public so they can come and see what you've got, that's fine. When it got to 200 people turning up on a Sunday afternoon, the post office decided that perhaps that wasn't such a good idea, so they were encouraged to find somewhere else. A guy called Alan Breeze ran the pub at the time. He was part of the Billy Cotton Banjo, so quite well known. So a lot of famous people used to use the buck in those days. But he offered the use of a barn at the back of the buck. So they moved all the stuff 100 yards down the road into the barn at the back of the buck, were then offered a couple of aeroplanes. By then it was a guy called Andrew Gillam running the pub. He allowed them the use of the front meadow. The aircraft were placed in the front meadow. Collection continued to grow and outgrew the barn. So they bought 8 acres from Andrew Gillam of what was then marshland on this side of the stream. So we're now to the north of the stream. That site was gradually developed over the course of the years. We bought that land in 1984. And it's been being developed ever since. So it is now, as I described earlier, the buildings that we have. We still occupy the meadow at the front, courtesy of the Buck Public Inn. They still own that, but we own the 8 behind that. We also now own a little piece of the woodland next door and a piece of the meadow that runs down to the road, which, again, we are in the process of getting planning permission to develop.
I'll have some more questions about the museum now in a moment, but I was quite interested by what you said about originally people digging for bits of airplane. How did people know where things were?
Mostly from local stories. Fred would say, oh, down the war, something big crashed just over there behind that tree. So they'd all go and look over there. And when an aeroplane falls to the ground, it doesn't tend to end up as an aeroplane. It tends to dive itself into the ground and bury itself. They would have to dig down based on the word of somebody who said, yeah, it crashed about there. Sometimes there was evidence of it having gone in. Other times there were records within the Ministry of Defence records where a lot of the aircraft had been taken away, but it was known that not all of it had. The War Office, as it was then, would always remove bodies. There were no bodies left, so there were no war graves to consider by then. Where there was a war grave, then special permission was needed, and there had to be people on site from the authorities in order to deal with anything that was found.
Obviously, not all of the artefacts have come through local people digging up airplanes.
No.
Where has everything else come from that you now need such a big site?
Okay, around 9 of the aircraft are on loan from one of our members. He owns those 9 aircraft. A further 3 are on loan from the United States Air Force. When the French fell out with the Americans during the 1970s, the Americans demanded all of their aeroplanes back that were on loan. So those were all flown into RAF Sculthorpe. Once they'd got them there, the Americans thought to themselves, what do we do with these aeroplanes now? They had about 100 aeroplanes sitting out there. So they offered them on loan to any museum that would like one. The volunteers went across to Sculthorpe and picked up one of each type that was available and brought it here. And those aircraft are still here to this day. And we still have to report to the United States Air Force every year on the condition of those aircraft. Various other aircraft were donated to us. A few we have bought, so we purchased some of them, usually for the scrap value thereof, but one or two of them we've paid a bit more than that. But for the most part, they're either loans or donations. The artefacts are almost entirely donations. Somebody will be going through their father's or grandfather's stuff when they die. They will discover some items that they think might be of interest to us, and we are offered those. Sadly, we're offered at least 5 times as much as we can actually take on. We have to be, in the early days, we weren't very choosy, so we'd take just about anything that was offered. Nowadays, because of the requirements of storage space and display space, etc., we do have to be far more selective about what we're able to take on. That where 60 aeroplanes and 45,000 bits of stuff came from.
Amongst those bits of stuff, do you know which ones are most popular with your visitors?
Gosh, that's a hard question. We do know that the most photographed aircraft that we have is a wooden replica that was made for children to sit in. So we know that's the most photographed one, and it's not even a real aeroplane. But the Valletta is very popular. We sell cockpit tools. If people want to look around the cockpits, we've got 7 aircraft are available that people can get inside with a guide. And the Valletta is very popular. The Lightning cockpit that we have is also very popular. But I think in the answer to what is the most popular, I think that varies from person to person. Different people will have different interests. Somebody will see something that sparks a memory, perhaps. For me, that would always be the Lightning, because when I grew up near RAF Coleshill, they were always flying overhead. But for some people, it might be the Canberra, because, again, they're familiar with it. Others, different aircraft. So, yeah, I don't think there's a single answer to that.
Amongst all of the artefacts, is there anything that you think people would find surprising? Is anything quite rare?
Surprising? I think a lot of people are surprised by the amount of stories that we have in Room 3. Now, sadly, as at today, Room 3 is closed because we're refurbishing the room that enables you to get to it. Hopefully that will reopen in the very near future. But there's a lot of stories in there. A lot of them are of women who served in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force during the war. So there's a lot of stories of what women did in there. That does surprise quite a few people, that we've got quite a few artefacts from their times and photographs of things that they were doing. In terms of rare, the Valletta aircraft that I mentioned earlier is the only one assembled in the United Kingdom, and we believe is the only whole one in the world. There are other aircraft. The Vickers Viking was an airliner version of the same thing, but ours is a military one. So there are a couple of Vickers Vikings about, one of which has recently been brought back to the country, but the Valletta is the only one. The other one that is extremely rare is the Felixstowe flying boat. We have a couple of P pieces of a Felix Stowe flying boat. The only reason it survived, it's wooden and it dates back to the First World War. The only reason it survived is because somebody used it as a potting shed for a large number of years and kept it varnished and protected from the weather. So that has survived. And again, it is the only, as far as we know, it is the only piece, significant piece of a Felix Stowe that's left anywhere. Very recently, we were contacted by a Canadian family whose grandfather had flown Felix Stowes as a gunner during the First World War. They offered us his flying coat. That has just recently come in from Canada, about February this year. It's not currently on display. In fact, it's actually sitting just there where we're talking now. So that is that coat. It's well over 100 years old. It's made of leather. And it'll be going on display just as soon as we can get the cabinet to display it in. But again, very rare.
It's quite exciting to be sat next to something that's got that much history attached to it. During your time as a volunteer here, have you had any stories or moments that have stood out to you?
Gosh, I think those come from interacting with the public. People, I was showing an elderly gentleman around the Valletta on one occasion and showed him the cockpit, and he'd had actually flown in Vallettas during the Malaya conflict. He told me a story. He said that they very rarely had co-pilots because the RAF didn't have enough pilots to fly with a co-pilot. So as the air signals operator, he often ended up sitting in the co-pilot seat helping the pilot. In the back, they would have three army guys who were there to help supply the troops on the ground. They would pick up a 45-gallon oil drum on a parachute and throw it out of the open doors to the troops down below. He said you didn't argue with them when you got back to base. You get stories like that from people who were there, people who did it. I spoke to a Lancaster tail gunner once, and he had a lot of interesting tales about being stuck at the back of a Lancaster. It is mostly through that. Obviously, we've got a very diverse range of volunteers with a very diverse range of stories. You can always learn something from each other. We do have one volunteer who is 90, who has an absolutely comprehensive knowledge of everything radio that's occurred since about 1914, right through to the current day. He can tell you the details of just about every radio set. He has a photographic memory. His knowledge is just incredible.
That's impressive. I wonder how he got into radios.
It was his job for a large number of years. He set up a lot of the electronic countermeasures, electronic reconnaissance equipment on the RAF aircraft in the 1950s and 60s. That was his job for quite a time. That was the start of his interest, and he just picked up from there. He then worked in making road signs, but electronic road signs, I would stress. But yeah, he has a phenomenal knowledge of everything like that.
For the museum itself, with so many different volunteers with the different backgrounds, is there a particular aim or purpose or something that you hope that visitors will take away from coming here?
I think probably we aim to tell the story of aviation in East Anglia. Aviation has been a very important facet of East Anglian life now since the First World War, when they first set up the flying stations in the First World War, to building over 100 airfields in the region during the Second World War. The impact has been huge. We try to tell part of that story through into the Cold War, where, again, East Anglia was and is a very important part of aviation. The exploration for North Sea oil, it is a story that we currently don't tell very well, but that's an ongoing project. We are aiming to tell that story much better in the future and to try and get a few artifacts. So if anybody's listening that has a North Sea oil rig support helicopter that they don't want anymore, we'd be interested.
If somebody is interested and does have a helicopter spare, how can they contact you directly?
The easiest bet is via the museum email address, which is nsam, as in Norfolk Suffolk Aviation Museum, flixton@gmail.com.
Let's hope there's somebody listening. For somebody who is listening to this and is inspired to come and visit, what could they expect?
They can expect to be surprised as they come through the front gates at the extent of the land that we have, the number of aircraft that are sitting outside and inside, and the amount of space there is in buildings and the amount of artifacts. So I think the first thing they can expect is to be surprised. I hope they can expect to be impressed by the amount of information we have on those artifacts. We have, on several occasions, been complimented on the amount of information we give. I hope they would be impressed by the amount of stuff that's on display, because things that are interesting to one person are not as interesting to another. As I mentioned with what's the most interesting aircraft, That's also true of the artifacts that we have. I believe that there is something here for everybody to get interested and enthused about. Unlike a lot of museums that have been criticised by the culture press, we are continuing to display large amounts of artifacts of a wide variety in order to keep that interest going with visitors. I think the other thing that I hope wouldn't surprise them is we are almost entirely volunteer run. We do have a paid manager to look over the place. We're almost entirely volunteer run. The volunteers are incredibly enthusiastic about what they do, are very happy to share that with the visitors. If you do come, do engage with the strange guys in the light blue tabards, because they've got a lot of interesting stories to tell and they know a lot about what we've got.
What made you want to start volunteering here, and what's kept you here?
The answer to that is two very different things, actually. What made me want to start volunteering here, I took early retirement from Norwich Union. My wife's condition for me being allowed to retire and not look for another job was that I found something to keep my brain active. So I came here to replace the social aspects of work and to keep my brain going. I think had my wife known what the workload was going to be when I became chairman, she'd have probably not encouraged me to come here. But the reason I've stayed is because they are a fantastic lot of volunteers. They are brilliant people to work with. The sense of community here is great. I think the other thing to say about the volunteers is only about 5 of our volunteers actually work on aircraft. The rest work on things and stuff. So there are people who display things, there are people who come here to help guide the visitors, there are people who come here who are electricians, there are people who come here who are good at admin and paperwork, and I'm one of those, in fairness. Whatever your skill that you bring, firstly, we can use that skill. And secondly, we can actually teach you a lot more skills besides. I learned carpentry when I came here from a very expert carpenter. So I'm now much better at carpentry than ever I was.
It's an unexpected result.
Yes. Yep.
So we're coming to the end now. Is there anything else about the museum that you'd like people to know that we haven't covered?
I don't think so, except to reiterate that it is more than everybody thinks. I spoke to a person about 2 or 3 months ago who'd come in and said, didn't realise there was a museum here. And I said, no, a lot of people say that. And she said, yes, but I live just round the corner. People are surprised to discover that there is a museum in the middle of nowhere in Flixton, just outside Bungay. But we are here, we are welcoming, and come along and see us.